Any longer than that, we're out of here and you're on your own, okay? Okay, Reacher said. He unstrapped himself and slipped the headset off and followed the ramp down as it opened. There was a dark blue sedan with navy markings waiting on the tarmac with its motor running and its front passenger door open.
You, Reacher, the driver yelled.
Reacher nodded and slid in alongside him. The guy stamped on the gas.
I'm Navy Reserve, he said. We're helping the colonel out. A little inter-service cooperation.
I appreciate it, Reacher said.
Don't think twice, the guy said. So where are we headed?
Manhattan. Aim for Chinatown. You know where that is?
Do I? I eat there 3 times a week.
He took Flatbush Avenue and the Manhattan Bridge. Traffic was light, but ground transportation still seemed awful slow after the Lear and the helicopter. It was 30 minutes before Reacher was anywhere near where he wanted to be. A whole eighth of his available time gone. The guy came off the bridge approach and stopped short on a hydrant.
I'll be waiting right here, he said. Facing the other direction exactly 3 hours from now, so don't be late, okay?
Reacher nodded. I won't, he said. He slid out of the car and slapped twice on the roof, crossed the street and headed south. It was cold in New York and damp, but it wasn't actually raining. There was no sun visible, just a vague, sullen light in the sky where the sun ought to have been. He stopped walking and stood still for a moment. He was 20 minutes from Jody's office. He started walking again. There was 20 minutes he didn't have. First things first. That was his rule. And maybe they'd be watching her place. No way he could be seen in New York today. He shook his head and walked on, forced himself to concentrate. Glanced at his watch. It was late morning and he started worrying he was too early. On the other hand, he might be timing it just right. There was no way of telling. He had no experience. After 5 minutes, he stopped walking again. If any street was going to do it for him, this was the one. It was lined on both sides with Chinese restaurants, crowded together. Bright, gaudy facades in reds and yellows. There was a forest of signs in Oriental script. Pagoda shapes everywhere. The sidewalks were crowded. Delivery trucks double-parked tight against cars. Crates of vegetables and drums of oil piled on the curbs. He walked the length of the street twice, up and down, carefully inspecting the terrain, learning it. Looking at the alleys. Then he touched the gun in his pocket and set off strolling again, looking for his targets. They would be around somewhere, if he wasn't too early. He leaned on a wall and watched. They would be in a pair, two of them together. He watched for a long time. There were plenty of people in pairs, but they weren't the right people. They weren't them. None of them. He was too early. He glanced at his watch and saw his time ticking away. He pushed off the wall and strolled again. He looked into doorways as he passed. Nothing. He watched the alleys. Nothing. Time ticked on. He walked a block south and a block west and tried another street. Nothing. He waited on a corner. Still nothing. He went another block south, another block west. Nothing. He leaned on a skinny tree and waited, with the watch on his wrist hammering like a machine. Nothing. He walked back to his starting point and leaned on his wall and watched the lunch crowd build to a peak. Then he watched it ebb away. Suddenly more people were coming out of the restaurants than were going in. His time was ebbing away with them. He moved to the end of the street, checked his watch again. He had been waiting 2 whole hours. He had 1 hour left. Nothing happened. The lunch crowd died away to nothing, and the street went quiet. Trucks drove in, stopped, unloaded, drove out again. A light drizzle started, and then it stopped. Low clouds moved across the narrow sky. Time ticked away. He walked east and south. Nothing there. He came back again and walked up one side of the street and down the other, waited at the corner. Checked his watch over and over. He had 40 minutes left. Then 30. Then 20. Then he saw them. And he suddenly understood why it was now and not before. They had been waiting for the lunch hour cash flow to be neatly stashed in the registers. There were 2 guys. Chinese, of course. Young, shiny black hair worn long on their collars. They wore dark pants and light windbreakers with scarves at their necks like a uniform. They were very blatant. One carried a satchel and the other carried a notebook with a pen trapped in the spiral binding. They strolled into each restaurant in turn, slow and casual. Then they strolled out again, with one guy zipping the satchel and the other guy noting something in his book. One restaurant, then two, then three, then four. 15 minutes ticked away. Reacher watched. He crossed the street and moved ahead of them, waited near a restaurant door, watched them go in. Watched them approach an old guy at the register. They just stood there, said nothing. The old guy reached into the cash drawer and took out a wad of folded bills. The agreed amount, ready and waiting. The guy with the book took them and handed them to his partner. Wrote something in the book as the money disappeared into the satchel. Reacher stepped ahead, up to where a narrow alley separated two buildings. He ducked in and waited with his back to the wall, where they wouldn't see him until it was too late. He checked his watch. He had less than 5 minutes. He timed the two guys in his head. He built a mental picture of their lazy, complacent pace, followed their rhythm in his mind, waited, waited. Then he stepped out of the alley and met them head on. They bumped right into him. He seized a bunch of windbreaker in each hand and leaned backward and swung them through a complete explosive half circle and smashed them back first into the alley wall. The guy in his right hand followed the wider arc and therefore hit harder and therefore bounced farther. Reacher caught him solidly with his elbow as he came forward off the wall and he went down on the floor. Didn't come back up again. He was the guy with the satchel. The other guy dropped the book and went for his pocket, but Reacher had Trent's Beretta out first. He stood close and held it angled low, down in the tails of his coat, down toward the guy's kneecap. "Be smart, okay?" he said. He reached down with his left and racked the slide. The sound was muffled by the cloth of his coat, but to his practiced ear, it sounded horribly empty. No final click of the shell case smacking home, but the Chinese guy didn't notice. Too dizzy, too shocked. He just pressed himself to the wall like he was trying to back right through it. Put all his weight on one foot, unconsciously preparing for the bullet that would blow his leg away. "You're making a mistake, pal," he whispered. Reacher shook his head. "No, we're making a move, asshole."
"Who's we?"
"Petrosian," Reacher said.
"Petrosian, you're kidding me."
"No way," Reacher said. "I'm serious, real serious. This street is Petrosian's now. As of today, as of right now, all of it, the whole street. You clear on that?"
"This street is ours."
"Not anymore. It's Petrosian's. He's taking it over. You want to lose a leg arguing about it?"
"Petrosian?"
the guy repeated. "Believe it," Reacher said, and slammed him left-handed in the stomach. The guy folded forward and Reacher tapped him above the ear with the butt of the gun and dropped him neatly on top of his partner. He clicked the trigger to free the slide and put the gun back in his pocket, picked up the satchel and tucked it under his arm, walked out of the alley, and turned north. He was already late. If his watch was a minute slow and the Navy guy's was a minute fast, then the rendezvous was already gone. But he didn't run. Running in the city was too conspicuous. He walked away as fast as he could, stepping one pace to the side for every 3 paces forward, threading his way along the sidewalks. He turned a corner and saw the blue car, USNR painted discreetly on its flank. He saw it moving away from the curb, saw it lurching out into the traffic stream. Now he ran. He got to where it had been parked 4 seconds after it left. Now it was 3 cars ahead, accelerating to catch the light. He stared after it. The light changed to red. The car accelerated faster. Then the guy chickened out and hit the brakes. The car slammed to a neat stop a foot into the crosswalk. Pedestrians swarmed out in front of it. Reacher breathed again and ran to the intersection and pulled open the passenger door. Dumped himself into the seat, panting. The driver nodded to him. Didn't say a word. Didn't offer any kind of an apology for not waiting. Reacher didn't expect one. When the Navy says 3 hours, it means 3 hours. 180 minutes. Not a second more, not a second less. Time and tide wait for no man. The Navy was built on all kinds of bullshit like that. The journey back to Trent's office at Dick's was the exact reverse of the journey out. 30 minutes. In the car through Brooklyn, the waiting helicopter, the raucous flight back to McGuire, the lieutenant and the staff Chevy waiting on the tarmac. Reacher spent the flight time counting the money in the satchel. There was a total of $1,200 in there, 6 folded wads of 200 each. He gave the money to the loadmasters for their next unit party. He tore the satchel along its seams and dropped the pieces through the flare hatch, 2,000 feet above Lakewood, New Jersey. It was still raining at Dick's. The lieutenant drove him back to the alley and he walked to Trent's window and rapped softly on the glass. Trent opened it up and he climbed back inside the office. "We okay?" he asked. Trent nodded. "She's just been sitting out there quiet as a mouse all day. Must be real impressed with our dedication. We worked right through lunch." Reacher nodded and handed back the empty gun, took off his jacket, sat down in his chair, slipped his ID around his neck again and picked up a file. Trent had moved the stack right to left across the desk like it had been minutely examined. "Success?" Trent asked. "I think so. Time will tell, right?" Trent nodded and looked out at the weather. He was restless. He'd been trapped in his office all day. "Let her in if you want," Reacher said. "Show's over now." "You're all wet," Trent said. "Show's not over until you're dried out." It took 20 minutes to dry out. He used Trent's phone and called Jody's numbers. The private office line, the apartment, the mobile. No reply, no reply, out of service. He stared at the wall. Then he read an unclassified file about proposed methods of getting mail to the Marines if they had to go serve in the Indian Ocean. The time he spent on it put him lower in his chair and put a glazed look on his face. When Trent finally opened the door and Harper got her second peek of the day, he was slumped and inert, exactly like a man looks after an arduous day with paperwork. "Progress?" she called. He looked up and sighed at the ceiling. "Maybe."
6 solid hours, you must have gotten somewhere.
"Maybe," he said again. There was silence for a moment.
"Okay, so let's go," she said.
She stood up behind her desk and stretched. She put her arms way above her head, palms flat, reaching for the ceiling. Some kind of a yoga thing. She arched her face upward and tilted her head, and her hair cascaded down her back. 3 sergeants and 1 colonel stared at her. "So let's go," Reacher said.
"Don't forget your notes," Trent said.
He handed over a sheet of paper. There was a list of maybe 30 names printed on it. Probably Trent's high school football team. Reacher put the list in his pocket and put his coat on and shook Trent's hand. Walked through the anteroom outside into the rain and stood there breathing for a second like a man who has been sitting down all day. Then Harper nudged him toward the lieutenant's car for the drive back to the Lear. Blake and Poulton and Lamar were waiting for them at the same table in the Quantico cafeteria. It was just as dark outside, but now the table was set for dinner, not breakfast. There was a jug of water and 5 glasses, salt and pepper, bottles of steak sauce. Blake ignored Reacher and glanced at Harper, who nodded back to him like a reassurance. Blake looked satisfied.
"So, you found our guy yet?"
he asked.
"Maybe," Reacher said. "I've got 30 names. He could be one of them."
"So let's see them."
"Not yet. I need more."
Blake stared at him.
"Bullshit, you need more. We need to get tails on these guys."
Reacher shook his head. "Can't be done. These guys are in places where you can't go. You even want a warrant on these guys, you're going to have to go to the Secretary of Defense right after you've been to the judge. And defense is going to go straight to the Commander-in-Chief, who was the president last time I looked. So you're going to need a damn sight more than I can give you right now."
"So what are you saying?"
"I'm saying, let me boil it down some."
"How?"
Reacher shrugged. "I want to go see Lamar's sister."
"My stepsister," Lamar said.
"Why?"
Blake asked. Reacher wanted to say, "Because I'm just killing time, asshole, and I'd rather do it on the road than stuck here." But he composed his face into a serious look and shrugged again. "Because we need to think laterally," he said. "If this guy is killing by category, we need to know why. He can't be mad at a whole category just like that. One of these women must have sparked him off first time around. Then he must have transferred his rage from the personal to the general, right? So who was it? Lamar's sister could be a good place to start asking. She got a transfer between units, two very different units. That doubles her potential contacts, profile-wise. It sounded professional enough. Blake nodded.
Okay, he said. We'll set it up. He'll go tomorrow.
Where does she live?
Washington State, Lamar said. Someplace outside of Spokane, I think.
You think? You don't know?
I've never been there, she said. I sure as hell don't get enough vacation time to drive all the way out and drive all the way back.
Reacher nodded, turned to Blake. You should be guarding these women, he said. Blake sighed heavily.
Do the arithmetic, for God's sake. 88 women, and we don't know which one is next 17 days to go if he sticks to his cycle. 3 agents every 24 hours? That's more than 100,000 man-hours, random locations all around the country. We just can't do it. We don't have the agents. We warn the local police departments, of course, but what can they do? Like outside of Spokane, Washington, for instance. The local police department is probably one man and a German shepherd. They drive by time to time, I guess, and that's all we got.
Have you warned the women, too? Blake looked embarrassed and shook his head.
We can't. If we can't guard them, we can't warn them. Because what would we be saying? You're in danger, but sorry, girls, you're entirely on your own. Can't be done. We need to catch this guy, Fulton said. That's the only sure way to help these women.
Lamar nodded.
He's out there somewhere. We need to bring him in.
Reacher looked at them. 3 psychologists. They were trying to push all the right buttons, trying to make it a challenge. He smiled. I get the message.
Okay, you go to Spokane tomorrow, Lamar said. Meanwhile, I'll work the files some more. You review them the day after tomorrow. That gives you the stuff you got from Trent, plus the stuff you get in Spokane, plus what we've already gotten. At which point, we'll expect some real progress from you.
Reacher smiled again. Whatever, Lamar.
So eat and get to bed, Blake said. It's a long way to Spokane. Early start tomorrow. Harper will go with you, of course.
To bed? Blake was embarrassed again.
To Spokane, asshole!
Reacher nodded. Whatever, Blake. The problem was, it was a challenge. He was sealed in his room, lying alone on the bed, staring up at the blind eye of the hidden camera. But he wasn't seeing it. His gaze had dissolved just like it used to into a blur. A green blur. Like the whole of America had disappeared and returned to grassland and forest. The buildings gone, the roads gone, the noise gone. The population all gone. Except for one man somewhere. Reacher stared into the silent blur, 100 miles, 1,000 miles, 3,000 miles. His gaze roving north and south, east and west, looking for the faint shadow, waiting for the sudden movement. He's out there somewhere. We need to catch this guy. He was walking around right now, or sleeping, or planning, or preparing. And he was thinking he was just about the smartest guy on the whole continent. Well, we'll see about that, Reacher thought. He stirred. He ought to get seriously involved. Or, on the other hand, maybe not. It was a big decision, waiting to be made. But it wasn't made yet. He rolled over and closed his eyes. He could think about it later. Or he could make the decision tomorrow, or the next day. Whenever. The decision was made. About the interval. The interval was history. Time to speed things up a little. 3 weeks was way too long to wait now. This sort of thing, you let the idea creep up on you. You look at it. You consider it. You see its value. You see its appeal. And the decision is really made for you, isn't it? You can't get the genie back in the bottle, not once it's out. And this genie is out. All the way out. Up and running. So you run with it.
Chapter 12. There was no breakfast meeting the next morning. The day started too early. Harper opened the door before Reacher was even dressed. He had his pants on and was smoothing the wrinkles out of his shirt with his palm against the mattress.
Love those scars, she said.
She took a step closer, looking at his stomach with undisguised curiosity.
"What's that one from?"
she asked, pointing to his right side. He glanced down. The right side of his stomach had a violent tracery of stitches in the shape of a twisted star. They bulged out above the muscle wall, white and angry. "My mother did it," he said.
"Your mother?"
"I was raised by grizzly bears in Alaska." She rolled her eyes and moved them up to the left side of his chest. There was a .38 caliber bullet hole there, punched right into the pectoral muscle. The hair was missing from around it. It was a big hole. She could have lost her little finger in it, right up to the first knuckle. "Exploratory surgery," he said. "Checking if I had a heart."
"You're happy this morning," she said.
He nodded. "I'm always happy."
"Did you get Jody yet?"
He shook his head. "I haven't tried since yesterday."
"Why not?"
"Waste of time. She's not there."
"Are you worried?"
He shrugged. "She's a big girl."
"I'll tell you if I hear anything."
He nodded. "You better."
"Where are they really from?" she asked. "The scars."
He buttoned his shirt. "The gut is from bomb shrapnel," he said. "The chest? Somebody shot me."
"Dramatic life."
He took his coat from the closet. "No, not really. Pretty normal, wouldn't you say? For a soldier?" "A soldier figuring to avoid physical violence is like a CPA figuring to avoid adding numbers."
"Is that why you don't care about these women?"
He looked at her. "Who says I don't care?"
"I thought you'd be more agitated about it."
"Getting agitated won't achieve anything." She paused.
"So what will?"
"Working the clues, same as always."
"There aren't any clues. He doesn't leave any."
He smiled. "That's a clue in itself, wouldn't you say?" She used her key from the inside and opened the door.
"That's just talking in riddles," she said.
He shrugged. "Better than talking in bullshit like they do downstairs." The same motor pool guy brought the same car to the doors. This time he stayed in the driver's seat, sitting square on like a dutiful chauffeur. He drove them north on I-95 to the National Airport. It was before dawn. There was a half-hearted glow in the sky somewhere 300 miles to the east, all the way out over the Atlantic Ocean. The only other illumination was from 1,000 headlights streaming north toward work. The headlights were mostly on old model cars. Old, therefore cheap. Therefore owned by low-grade people aiming to be at their desks an hour before their bosses, so they would look good and get promotion, whereupon they could drive newer cars to work an hour later in the day. Reacher sat still and watched their shadowed faces as the bureau driver sped past them one by one. Inside the airport terminal, it was reasonably busy. Men and women in dark raincoats walked quickly from one place to another. Harper collected 2 coach tickets from the United desk and carried them over to the check-in counter.
"We could use some legroom," she said to the guy behind the counter.
She used her FBI pass for photo ID. She snapped it down like a poker player completing a flush. The guy hit a few keys and came up with an upgrade. Harper smiled, like she was genuinely surprised. First class was half empty. Harper took an aisle seat, trapping Reacher against the window like a prisoner. She stretched out. She was in a third, different suit. This one, a fine check in a muted gray. The jacket fell open and showed a hint of nipple through the shirt and no shoulder holster. "Left your gun at home?" Reacher asked. She nodded.
"Not worth the hassle. Airlines want too much paperwork. A Seattle guy is meeting us. Standard practice is he'd bring a spare, should we need one. But we won't, not today."
"You hope?" She nodded.
"I hope."
They taxied on time and took off a minute early. Reacher pulled the magazine out and started leafing through. Harper had her tray unfolded, ready for breakfast.
"What did you mean," she asked, "when you said it's a clue in itself?"
He forced his mind back an hour and tried to remember. "Just thinking aloud, I guess," he said.
"Thinking about what?"
He shrugged. He had time to kill. "The history of science, stuff like that."
"Is that relevant?"
"I was thinking about fingerprinting. How old is that?" She made a face.
"Pretty old, I think."
"Turn of the century?" She nodded.
"Probably."
"Okay, 100 years old, he said. "That was the first big forensic test, right? Probably started using microscopes around the same time. and since then they've invented all kinds of other stuff. DNA, mass spectrometry, fluorescence. Lamar said you've got tests I wouldn't believe. I bet they can find a rug fiber, tell you where and when somebody bought it, what kind of flea sat on it, what kind of dog the flea came off. Probably tell you what the dog's name is and what brand of dog food it ate for breakfast. So, amazing tests, right? She nodded. Real science fiction stuff, right? She nodded again. Okay, he said. Amazing science fiction tests. But this guy killed Amy Callan and beat all of those tests, right? Right. So what do you call that type of a guy?
What?
A very, very clever guy is what? She made a face. Among other things. Sure, a lot of other things. But whatever else, a very clever guy. Then he did it again, with Cook. Now what do we call him?
What?
A very, very clever guy. Once might have been luck. Twice, he's damn good.
So?
Then he did it again, with Stanley. Now what do we call him?
A very, very, very clever guy?
Reacher nodded. Exactly.
So?
So that's the clue. We're looking for a very, very, very clever guy.
I think we know that already.
Reacher shook his head. I don't think you do. You're not factoring it in.
In what sense?
You think about it. I'm only an errand boy. You bureau people can do all the hard work. The stewardess came out of the galley with the breakfast trolley. It was first class, so the food was reasonable. Reacher smelled bacon and egg and sausage. Strong coffee. He flipped his tray open. The cabin was half empty, so he got the girl to give him two breakfasts. Two airline meals made for a pleasant snack. She caught on quick and kept his coffee cup full.
How aren't we factoring it in? Harper asked.
Figure it out for yourself, Reacher said. I'm not in a helpful mood.
Is it that he's not a soldier?
He turned to stare at her. That's great. We agree he's a really smart guy, and so you say, well, then he's obviously not a soldier. Thanks a bunch, Harper. She looked away, embarrassed.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean it like that. I just can't see how we're not factoring it in.
He said nothing in reply, just drained his coffee and climbed over her legs to get to the bathroom. When he got back, she was still looking contrite.
Tell me,
she said. No.
You should, Reacher. Blake's going to ask me about your attitude.
My attitude? Tell him my attitude is if a hair on Jody's head gets hurt, I'll tear his legs off and beat him to death with them. She nodded.
You really mean that, right?
He nodded back. You bet your ass I do.
That's what I don't understand. Why aren't you feeling a little bit of the same way about these women? You liked Amy Callan, right? Not the same way as Jody, but you liked her.
I don't understand you either. Blake wanted to use you like a hooker, and you're acting like he's still your best buddy. She shrugged.
He was desperate. He gets like that. He's under a lot of stress. He gets a case like this. He's just desperate to crack it.
And you admire that? She nodded.
Sure I do. I admire dedication.
But you don't share it. Or you wouldn't have said no to him. He'd have seduced me on camera for the good of the cause. So maybe it's you who doesn't care enough about these women. She was quiet for a spell.
It was immoral. It annoyed me.
He nodded. And threatening Jody was immoral, too. It annoyed me.
But I'm not letting my annoyance get in the way of justice.
Well, I am. And if you don't like that, tough shit. They didn't speak again all the way to Seattle. 5 hours without a word. Reacher was comfortable enough with that. He was not a compulsively sociable guy. He was happier not talking. He didn't see anything odd about it. There was no strain involved. He just sat there, not talking, like he was making the journey on his own. Harper was having more trouble with it. He could see she was worried about it. She was like most people. Put her alongside somebody she was acquainted with, she felt she had to be conversing. For her, it was unnatural not to be. But he didn't relent. 5 hours without a single word. Those 5 hours were reduced to 2 by the West Coast clocks. It was still about breakfast time when they landed. The SeaTac terminals were filled with people starting out on their day. The arrivals hall had the usual echelon of drivers holding placards up. There was one guy in a dark suit, striped tie, short hair. He had no placard, but he was their guy. He might as well have had FBI tattooed across his forehead. "Lisa Harper?" he said. "I'm from the Seattle field office." They shook hands.
"This is Reacher," she said.
The Seattle agent ignored him completely. Reacher smiled and sighed. Touché, he thought. But then the guy might have ignored him anyway, even if they were best buddies, because he was pretty much preoccupied with paying a whole lot of attention to what was under Harper's shirt. "We're flying to Spokane," he said. "Air taxi company owes us a few favors." He had a bureau car parked in the tow lane. He used it to drive a mile around the perimeter road to General Aviation, which was 5 acres of fenced tarmac filled with parked planes, all of them tiny, 1 and 2 engines. There was a cluster of huts with low-budget signs advertising transportation and flying lessons. A guy met them outside one of the huts. He wore a generic pilot's uniform and led them toward a clean white 6-seat Cessna. It was a medium-sized walk across the apron. Fall in the northwest had brighter light than D.C., but it was just as cold. The interior of the plane was about the same size Lamar's Buick had been, and a whole lot more Spartan, but it looked clean and well-maintained, and the engine started first touch on the button. It taxied out to the runway with the same sensation of tiny size Reacher had felt in the Lear at McGuire. It lined up behind a 747 bound for Tokyo, the way a mouse lines up behind an elephant. Then it wound itself up and was off the ground in seconds, wheeling due east, settling to a noisy cruise 1,000 feet above the ground. The airspeed indicator showed more than 120 knots, and the plane flew on for 2 whole hours. The seat was cramped and uncomfortable, and Reacher started wishing he'd thought of a better way to waste his time. He was going to spend 14 hours in the air all in one day. Maybe he should have stayed and worked on the files with Lamar. He imagined a quiet room somewhere, like a library, a stack of papers, a leather chair. Then he pictured Lamar herself and glanced across at Harper and figured maybe he'd taken the right option after all. The airfield at Spokane was a modest, modern place, larger than he had expected. There was a bureau car waiting on the tarmac, identifiable even from 1,000 feet up, a clean, dark sedan with a man in a suit leaning on the fender. "From the Spokane satellite office," the Seattle guy said. The car rolled over to where the plane parked, and they were on the road within 20 seconds of the pilot shutting down. The local guy had the destination address written on a pad fixed to his windshield with a rubber suction cup. He seemed to know where the place was. He drove 10 miles east toward the Idaho Panhandle and turned north on a narrow road into the hills. The terrain was moderate, but there were giant mountains in the middle distance. Snow gleamed on the peaks. The road had a building every mile or so, separated by thick forest and broad meadow. The population density was not encouraging. The address itself might have been the main house of an old cattle ranch, sold off long ago and refurbished by somebody looking for the rural dream, but unwilling to forget the aesthetics of the city. It was boxed into a small lot by new ranch fencing. Beyond the fencing was grazing land, and inside the fencing the same grass had been fed and mowed into a fine lawn. There were trees on the perimeter, contorted by the wind. There was a small barn with garage doors punched into the side, and a path veering off from the driveway to the front door. The whole structure stood close to the road and close to its own fencing, like a suburban house standing close to its neighbors, but this one stood close to nothing. The nearest man-made object was at least a mile away north or south, maybe 20 miles away east or west. The local guy stayed in the car, and Harper and Reacher got out and stood stretching on the shoulder. Then the engine shut down behind them, and the stunning silence of the empty country fell on them like a weight. It hummed and hissed and echoed in their ears. "I'd feel better if she lived in a city apartment," Reacher said. Harper nodded.
"With a doorman."
There was no gate. The ranch fencing just stopped either side of the mouth of the driveway. They walked together toward the house. The driveway was shale, reassuringly noisy at least. There was a slight breeze, Reacher could hear it in the power lines. Harper stopped at the front door. There was no bell push, just a big iron knocker in the shape of a lion's head with a heavy ring held in its teeth. There was a fisheye spy hole above it. The spy hole was new. There were burrs of clean wood where the drill had chipped the paint. Harper grasped the iron ring and knocked twice. The ring thumped on the wood. The sound was loud and dull, and it rolled out over the grassland, came back seconds later from the hills. There was no response. Harper knocked again. The sound boomed out. They waited. There was a creak of floorboards inside the house. Footsteps. The sound approached unseen and stopped behind the door.
"Who is it?"
a voice called. A woman's voice, apprehensive. Harper went into her pocket and came out with her badge. It was backed with a slip of leather, the same type of gold-on-gold shield Lamar had clicked against Reacher's car window. The eagle at the top, head cocked to the left. She held it up 6 inches in front of the spy hole.
"FBI, ma'am," she announced. "We called you yesterday, made an appointment."
The door opened with the creak of old hinges and revealed an entrance hall with a woman in it. She was holding the doorknob, smiling with relief.
"Julia's got me so damn nervous," she said.
Harper smiled back in a sympathetic way and introduced herself and Reacher. The woman shook hands with both of them.
"Allison Lamar," she said. "Really pleased to meet you."
She led the way inside. The hall was square and as large as a room, walled and floored in old pine which had been stripped and waxed to a fresh color a shade darker than the gold on Harper's badge. There were curtains in yellow-checked gingham, sofas with feather-filled pillows, old oil lamps converted to take electric bulbs.
"Can I get you guys coffee?"
Allison Lamar asked.
"I'm all set right now,"
Harper said. "Yes, please," Reacher said. She led them through to the kitchen, which was the whole rear quarter of the first floor. It was an attractive space, waxed floor polished to a shine, new cabinets in unostentatious timber, a big country range, a line of gleaming machines for washing clothes and dishes, electric gadgets on the countertops, more yellow gingham at the windows. An expensive renovation, he guessed, but designed to impress only herself.
"Cream and sugar?"
she asked. "Just black," he said. She was medium height, dark, and she moved with the bounce of a fit, muscular woman. Her face was open and friendly, tanned like she lived outdoors, and her hands were worn, like she maybe installed her own ranch fencing for herself. She smelled of lemon scent and was dressed in clean denim which had been carefully pressed. She wore tooled cowboy boots with clean soles. It looked like she'd made an effort for her visitors. She poured coffee from a machine into a mug, handed it to Reacher and smiled. The smile was a mixture of things. Maybe she was lonely, but it proved there was no blood relationship with her stepsister. It was a pleasant smile, interested, friendly, smiled in a way Julia Lamar had no idea existed. It reached her eyes, which were dark and liquid. Reacher was a connoisseur of eyes, and he rated these two as more than acceptable. "Can I look around?" he asked.
"Security check?" she said.
He nodded. "I guess."
"Be my guest."
He took his coffee with him. The two women stayed in the kitchen. The house had 4 rooms on the first floor, entrance, kitchen, parlor, living room. The whole place was solidly built out of good timber. The renovations were excellent quality. All the windows were new storm units and stout wood frames. The weather was cold enough that the screens were out and stored. Each window had a key. The front door was original, old pine 2 inches thick and aged like steel. Big hinges and a city lock. There was a back hallway with a back door, similar vintage and thickness, same lock. Outside there were thick, thorny foundation plantings he guessed were chosen for wind resistance, but were as good as anything for stopping people spending time trying to get in the windows. There was a steel cellar door with a big padlock latched through the handles. The garage was a decent barn, less well-maintained than the house, but not about to fall down anytime soon. There was a new Jeep Cherokee inside, and a stack of cartons proving the renovations had been recent. There was a new washing machine still boxed up and sealed. A workbench with power saws and drills stored neatly on a shelf above it. He went back into the house and up the stairs. Same windows as elsewhere. 4 bedrooms. Allison's was clearly the back room on the left, facing west over empty country as far as the eye could see. It would be dark in the mornings, but the sunsets would be spectacular. There was a new master bathroom, stealing space from the next-door bedroom. It held a toilet, a sink, and a shower, and a tub. He went back down to the kitchen. Harper was standing by the window, looking out at the view. Allison Lamar was sitting at the table.
"Okay," she said.
Reacher nodded. "Looks good to me. You keep the doors locked?"
"I do now. Julia made such a fuss about it. I lock the windows, I lock the doors, I use the spy hole. I put 911 on the speed dial."
"So you should be okay," Reacher said. "This guy isn't into breaking doors down, apparently. Don't open up to anybody. Nothing can go wrong."
She nodded. "That's how I figure it. You need to ask me some questions now."
"That's why they sent me, I guess." He sat down opposite her, focused on the gleaming machines on the other side of the room, desperately trying to think of something intelligent to say. "How's your father doing?" he asked.
"That's what you want to know?"
He shrugged. "Julia mentioned he was sick." She nodded, surprised.
"He's been sick 2 years, cancer. Now he's dying, almost gone, just hanging on day by day. He's in the hospital in Spokane. I go there every afternoon."
"I'm very sorry."
"Julia should come out, but she's awkward with him."
"She doesn't fly." Allison made a face.
"She could get over that. Just once in 2 years. But she's all hung up on this stepfamily thing, as if it really matters. Far as I'm concerned, she's my sister, pure and simple. And sisters take care of each other, right? She should know that. She's going to be the only relative I've got. She'll be my next of kin, for God's sake."
"Well, I'm sorry about all that, too." She made another face.
"Right now, that's not too important. What can I help you with?"
"You got any feeling for who this guy could be?" She smiled.
"That's a rather basic question."
"It's a rather basic issue. You got any instinct?"
"It's some guy who thinks it's okay to harass women. Or maybe not okay, exactly. Could be some guy who just thinks the fallout should be kept behind closed doors."
"Is that an option?"
Harper asked. She sat down next to Reacher. Allison glanced at her.
"I don't really know. I'm not sure there is any middle ground. Either you swallow it, or it goes public in a big way."
"Did you look for the middle ground?"
She shook her head.
"I'm the living proof. I just went ballistic. There was no middle ground there. At least I couldn't see any."
"Who was your guy?" Reacher asked.
"A colonel called Gascoigne," she said. "He was always full of shit about coming to him if anything was bothering you. I went to him about getting reassigned. I saw him 5 times. I wasn't pleading the feminist case or anything. It wasn't a political thing. I just wanted something more interesting to do. And frankly, I thought the army was wasting a good soldier because I was good."
Reacher nodded. "So what happened with Gascoigne?" Allison made a face.
"I didn't see it coming," she said. "At first, I thought he was just kidding around."
She paused, looked away.
"He said I should try next time without my uniform on," she said. "I thought he was asking for a date. You know, meet him in town, some bar, off duty, plain clothes. But then he made it clear, no, he meant right there in his office, stripped off."
Reacher nodded. "Not a very nice suggestion." She made another face.
"Well, he led up to it pretty slow, and he was pretty jokey about it at first. It was like he was flirting. I almost didn't notice, you know? Like, he's a man, I'm a woman, it's not a huge surprise, right? But clearly he figured I wasn't getting the message. So then all of a sudden he got obscene. He described what I'd have to do, you know? 1 foot on this corner of his desk, the other foot on the other corner, hands behind my head, motionless for 30 minutes, then bending over, you know? Like a porno movie. Then it did hit me, the rage. All in a split second. And I just went nuclear."
Reacher nodded. "And you busted him?"
"Sure I did."
"How did he react?"
She smiled. "He was puzzled, more than anything.
I'm sure he'd done it lots of times before and gotten away with it. I think he was kind of surprised the rules had changed on him.
Could he be the guy?
She shook her head.
No. This guy is deadly, right? Gascoigne wasn't like that. He was an old, sad man, tired and ineffectual. Julia says this guy is a piece of work. I don't see Gascoigne having that kind of initiative, you know?
Reacher nodded again. If your sister's profile is correct, this is probably a guy from the background somewhere.
Right, Allison said. Maybe not connected with any specific incident. Maybe some kind of distant observer turned Avenger.
If Julia's profile is correct, Reacher said again. There was a short silence.
Big if, Allison said.
You got doubts?
You know I have, she said. And I know you have too, because we both know the same things.
Harper sat forward.
What are you saying?
Allison made a face.
I just can't see a soldier going to all this trouble. Not over this issue. It just doesn't work like that. The army changes the rules all the time. Go back 50 years, it's okay to harass blacks, then it's not. It's okay to shoot gook babies, then it's not. A million things like that. Hundreds of men were canned one after the other for some new invented offense. Truman integrated the army. Nobody started killing the blacks who filed complaints. This is some kind of new reaction. I can't understand it.
Maybe men versus women is more fundamental,
Harper said.
Allison nodded. Maybe it is. I really don't know. But at the end of the day, like Julia says, the target group is so specific it has to be a soldier. Who else could even identify us?
But it's a very weird soldier, that's for damn sure. Not like any I've ever met.
Really?
Harper said.
Nobody at all? No threats, no comments while it was all happening?
Nothing significant. Nothing more than casual bullshit, nothing that I recall. I even flew out to Quantico and let Julia hypnotize me in case there was something buried there, but she said I came up with nothing.
Silence again. Harper swept imaginary crumbs from the table and nodded.
Okay. Wasted trip, right?
Sorry, guys, Allison said.
Nothing's ever wasted, Reacher said. Negatives can be useful, too. And the coffee was great.
You want more?
No, he doesn't, Harper said. We've got to get back.
Okay.
She stood up and followed them out of her kitchen, crossed the hall and opened her front door.
Don't let anybody in, Reacher said.
Allison smiled.
I don't plan to.
I mean it, Reacher said. It looks like there's no force involved. This guy is just walking in, so you might know him. Or he's some kind of a con artist with some kind of a plausible excuse. Don't fall for it.
I don't plan to, she said again. Don't worry about me.
And call me if you need anything. I'll be at the hospital afternoons as long as it takes. But any other time is good. And best of luck.
Reacher followed Harper through the front door out onto the shale path. They heard the door close behind them, and then the loud sound of the lock turning. The local bureau guy saved them 2 hours flying time by pointing out that they could hop from Spokane to Chicago and then change there for D.C. Harper did the business with the tickets and found out it was more expensive, which was presumably why the Quantico travel desk hadn't booked it that way in the first place. But she authorized the extra money herself and decided to have the argument later. Reacher admired her for it. He liked impatience and wasn't keen on another 2 hours in the Cessna. So they sent the Seattle guy back west alone and boarded a Boeing for Chicago. This time there was no upgrade because the whole plane was coach. It put them close together, elbows and thighs touching all the way.
So what do you think? Harper asked.
I'm not paid to think, Reacher said. In fact, so far I'm not getting paid at all. I'm a consultant, so you ask me questions and I'll answer them.
I did ask you a question. I asked what you think.
He shrugged. I think it's a big target group, and three of them are dead. You can't guard them, but if the other 88 do what Allison Lamar is doing, they should be okay.
You think locked doors are enough to stop this guy?
He chooses his own M.O. Apparently he doesn't touch anything. If they don't open the door for him, what's he going to do?
Maybe change his M.O.?
In which case you'll get him,
because you'll have to start leaving some hard evidence behind. He turned to look out of the window.
That's it? Harper said. We should just tell the women to lock their doors?
He nodded. I think you should be warning them, yes.
That doesn't catch the guy.
You can't catch him.
Why not?
Because of this profiling bullshit, you're not factoring in how smart he is. She shook her head.
Yes, we are. I've seen the profile. It says he's real smart. And profiling works, Reacher. Those people have had some spectacular successes.
Among how many failures?
What do you mean?
Reacher turned back to face her. Suppose I was in Blake's position. He's effectively a nationwide homicide detective, right? Gets to hear about everything. So suppose I was him, getting notified about every single homicide in America. Suppose every single time I said the likely suspect was a white male, age 30 and a half, wooden leg, divorced parents, drives a blue Ferrari. Every single time. Sooner or later, I'd be right. The law of averages would work for me. Then I could shout out, "Hey, I was right!" As long as I keep quiet about the 10,000 times I was wrong, I look pretty good, don't I? Amazing deduction.
That's not what Blake's doing.
Isn't it? Have you read stuff about his unit? She nodded.
Of course I have. That's why I applied for the assignment. There are all kinds of books and articles.
I've read them too. Chapter 1, successful case. Chapter 2, successful case. And so on. No chapters about all the times they were wrong. Makes me wonder about how many times that was. My guess is a lot of times. Too many times to want to write about them.
So what are you saying?
I'm saying a scattergun approach will always look good as long as you put the spotlight on the successes and sweep the failures under the rug.
That's not what they're doing.
He nodded. No, it isn't. Not exactly. They're not just guessing. They try to work at it. But it's not an exact science. It's not rigorous. And they're one unit among many, fighting for status and funding and position. You know how organizations work. They've got the budget hearings right now. First, second, and third duty is protecting their own ass against cuts by proclaiming their successes and concealing their failures.
So you think the profile is worthless?
He nodded. I know it is. It's internally flawed. It makes two statements that are incompatible.
What two statements?
He shook his head. No deal, Harper. Not until Blake apologizes for threatening Jody and pulls Julia Lamar off the case.
Why would he do that? She's his best profiler.
Exactly. The motor pool guy was at the National Airport in D.C. to pick them up. It was late when they arrived back at Quantico. Julia Lamar met them alone. Blake was in a budget meeting, and Poulton had signed out and gone home.
How was she?
Lamar asked. Your sister?
My stepsister.
She was okay, Reacher said.
What's her house like?
Secure, he said. Locked up tight as Fort Knox.
But isolated, right?
Very isolated, he said. She nodded. He waited.
So she's okay?
She said again. She wants you to visit, he said. She shook her head.
I can't. It would take me a week to get there.
Your father is dying.
My stepfather.
Whatever. She thinks you should go out there.
I can't,
she said again.
She's still the same?
Reacher shrugged. I don't know what she was like before. I only just met her today.
Dressed like a cowboy, tanned and pretty and sporty?
He nodded. You got it. She nodded again, vaguely.
Different from me.
He looked her over. Her cheap black city suit was dusty and creased, and she was pale and thin and hard. Her mouth was turned down. Her eyes were blank. Yes, different from you, he said.
I told you, she said. I'm the ugly sister.
She walked away without speaking again. Harper took him to the cafeteria, and they ate a late supper together. Then she escorted him up to his room. Locked him inside without a word. He listened to her footsteps fade away in the corridor and undressed and showered. Then he lay down on the bed, thinking and hoping and waiting, above all waiting, waiting for the morning. Chapter 13. The morning came, but it was the wrong morning. He knew it as soon as he reached the cafeteria. He had been awake and waiting 30 minutes before Harper showed up. She unlocked his door and breezed in, looking elegant and refreshed, wearing the same suit as the first day. Clearly, she had 3 suits and wore them in strict rotation. 3 suits was about right, he figured, given her likely salary. It was 3 suits more than he had, because it was a whole salary more than he had. They rode down in the elevator together and walked between buildings. The whole campus was very quiet. It had a weekend feel. He realized it was Sunday. The weather was better. No warmer, but the sun was out and it wasn't raining. He hoped for a moment it was a sign that this was his day, but it wasn't. He knew that as soon as he walked into the cafeteria. Blake was at the table by the window alone. There was a jug of coffee, 3 upturned mugs, a basket of cream and sugar, a basket of Danish and donuts. The bad news was the pile of Sunday newspapers, opened and read and scattered, with the Washington Post and USA Today, and worst of all, the New York Times just sitting right there in plain view. Which meant there was no news from New York, which meant it hadn't worked yet, which meant he was going to have to keep on waiting until it did. With 3 people at the table instead of 5, there was more elbow room. Harper sat down opposite Blake and Reacher sat opposite nobody. Blake looked old and tired and very strained. He looked ill. The guy was a heart attack waiting to happen. But Reacher felt no sympathy for him. Blake had broken the rules.
"Today you work the files," Blake said.
"Whatever," Reacher said.
"They're updated with the Lorraine Stanley material, so you need to spend a day reviewing them, and you can give us your conclusions at the breakfast meeting tomorrow. Clear?"
Reacher nodded. Crystal.
"Any preliminaries I should know about?"
"Preliminary what?"
"Conclusions. You got any thoughts yet?"
Reacher glanced at Harper. This was the point where a loyal agent would inform her boss about his objections. But she said nothing. Just looked down and concentrated on stirring her coffee. "Let me read the files," he said. "Too early to say anything right now." Blake nodded.
"We've got 16 days. We need to start making some real progress real soon."
Reacher nodded back. "I get the message. Maybe tomorrow we'll get some good news." Blake and Harper looked at him like it was an odd thing to say. Then they took coffee and Danish and donuts and sections of the papers and lingered like they had time to kill. It was Sunday, and the investigation was stalled, that was clear. Reacher recognized the signs. However urgent a thing is, there comes a point where there are no more places to go. The urgency burns out, and you sit there like you've got all the time in the world, while the world rages on around you. After breakfast, Harper took him to a room pretty much the same as he'd imagined while bucketing along in the Cessna. It was above ground, quiet, filled with light oak tables and comfortable padded chairs faced with leather. There was a wall of windows and the sun was shining outside. The only negative was one of the tables held a stack of files about 1 foot high. They were in dark blue folders with FBI printed on them in yellow letters. The stack was split into 3 bundles, each one secured with a thick rubber band. He laid them out on the table side by side. Amy Callan, Caroline Cook, Lorraine Stanley. 3 victims, 3 bundles. He checked his watch. 10:25, a late start. The sun was warming the room. He felt lazy.
"You didn't try Jody," Harper said.
He shook his head and said nothing.
"Why not?"
"No point. She's obviously not there."
"Maybe she went to your place, where her father used to live."
"Maybe," he said. "But I doubt it. She doesn't like it there, too isolated."
"Did you try it?"
He shook his head. "No."
"Worried?"
"I can't worry about something I can't change." She said nothing. There was silence. He pulled a file toward him.
"You read these?" he asked her.
She nodded.
"Every night. I read the files and the summaries."
"Anything in them?" She looked at the bundles, each one of them 4 inches thick.
"Plenty in them."
"Anything significant?"
"That's your call," she said.
He nodded reluctantly and stretched the rubber band off the Callan file, opened up the folder. Harper took her jacket off and sat down opposite, rolled up her shirt sleeves. The sun was directly